Well, good morning. This is Per Fagrang, Fight the Empire. And our guest is author, journalist, film star, Mike Rupert. Good morning, Mike. Are you there?
How are you?
Hey, good morning.
It's actually a pretty good day, Per. We got a great surprise last night, a two-hour special that I'd been working on with the History Channel that also features some names your listeners should know, like James Howard Kunstler and Nate Higgins from The Oil Drum. It's called The Prophets of Doom. It's going to be airing all week, and we are all just blown away at what a great job this thing turned out to be. It carries the message of relocalization and sustainability. It's going to be playing all week on the History Channel. I still haven't come down yet.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. So now this is a five-part series or what?
No, it's a two-hour special.
Oh, okay.
And extremely high production values, big budget, great photography, well-produced, and the message is really clear, and I'm so glad to see this breaking through in the mainstream.
So those who have a TV set, you can tune in to the History Channel, I guess, tonight and the rest of the week.
Check your local listings. It's going to be running for most of the next month, but you have to check your local listings as for time and what slot they put it into.
And what if you're like me and don't have a TV set?
Well, you can buy the DVD from the History Channel website. I'm not selling it, but I understand the sales have already taken off. But that's about the only ways I know to see it right now.
Can't get it on the internet then, maybe later sometime.
Yeah, that's totally out of my control, so I couldn't tell you.
Okay, that's really interesting. I would love to see that. It sounds really good. Well, we've had Jim Kunstler on the show a couple of times too, and
he was brilliant last night.
He's always got interesting stuff to say.
Yes.
Okay, now we have a new Congress, and they sort of had a few minutes of what they call bonhomie or something, and now they seem to be getting down to the usual stuff. So what do you see happening? Now, you have talked, there's going to be a debt limit showdown coming up. Maybe we should start with that.
Well, yeah, that's probably something that I don't think the Republicans are going to push for, because right now, if the debt ceiling was not raised, it would cause a default of U.S. government obligations. It would destroy the U.S. Government's credit rating. We have, for some unknown reason, a AAA credit rating. It would massively shut down services. It would be a catastrophic event. So I don't think the Republicans are going to play chicken too far with that. They're going to be compelled, as was the Bush administrations and the Reagan and all of them, to continue to increase the debt, which is going to lead, of course, to the same result as always. What I'm more worried about, Per, is a bill that's moving through committee right now that will allow states to declare bankruptcy. And I think that's probably the single biggest economic event we can see this year, that in very short order, you will see the bill passed and you will see New Jersey, New York, California, Michigan, and Illinois going bankrupt. And what that will mean, first and foremost, is that the pension funds will be seized. All state obligations to honor pension funds disappear with the bankruptcy. Pension funds have probably already been looted anyway, but you will see massive, massive cutbacks in services, worse than we've already seen, and massive reduction in wages and benefits for public employees.
Boy, well, you know, actually, it's very interesting that this came up today, because earlier on KBOO, we had Democracy Now, and they talked about that with a New York Times reporter, and then on Teresa Mitzel's show, she talked about that too. So that seems to be the big story right now. What would the effects be? I mean, are they going to actually take away people's, if you're getting, say, a pension check from the state of California or whoever, it'll stop coming?
Well, these are public employee pensions. So if you are a retired state worker, yes, you're going to lose your pension.
Okay.
And we're also looking at an absolute epidemic of municipal and county bankruptcies all around the country also in the first 3 months of the year. We've been tracking this very closely at the World News Desk on CollapseNet, all the stories indicating that. And, boy, it's really uniform, and it's from very mainstream sources as well, like Meredith Whitney, CBS News 60 Minutes did it. This is something everybody needs to be prepared for, because now, as opposed to what's happened for the last 2 years, you will see instantaneously massive cuts in services. And what happened in New York with the recent blizzard with the showdown by street sweepers is just going to be a precursor of labor unrest that's going to come. And I really hope that public employee unions rethink their strategy, because by refusing to plow streets and trashing people's cars, they are not making friends. Mm-hmm. And unions need to show leadership. There is not going to be ever any return to the life that we knew with the levels of benefits. There are no entitlements in a world of peak oil to anything.
Okay, now, for this to happen, do they have to pass a law saying that states can declare bankruptcy?
Yes. States right now constitutionally are not legally allowed to mm-hmm. go bankrupt. So the first thing that has to be done is an enabling act has to be passed that will allow states to default on their obligations, which means that they are no longer obligated to pay the pensions.
Mm-hmm.
Or provide the benefits to state employees.
So the Republicans in the House, you could expect them to pass it. But then what about the Senate? Don't they have to go along with it?
Oh, well, this is another issue that we may see with some paralysis and gridlock in Washington. However, I think the imperative is so clear. The 60-minute piece that we featured on the CollapseNet homepage for about a week was so clear on this, that the states have no choice. I mean, Illinois now, people are refusing to put gas in state police cars because the credit is so bad and the bills don't get paid.
Mm-hmm.
We have stories that suppliers are refusing to sell ammunition to prison guards. this is totally back against the wall. Bailouts are gone because the federal government, especially with the Republicans now, saying no more bailouts, and of course there will be some, but not for the states, are not going to backstop states as they have done for the past 2 years. So there's no hope from anywhere, because states and local governments can't print money like the federal government can.
So just trying to get this size this up. If the Republicans in the House can they be expected to pass this thing, then the Democrats control the Senate, and they would have to go along with it, and then wouldn't President Obama have to sign on to it?
And all of that will happen.
So in other words, what you're saying then is kind of the fix is in.
Well, there's no choice, Perry.
Uh-huh.
It's collapse.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's not going to get any better, because printing dollars doesn't do anything. Printing dollars is mm-hmm. only a promise to spend future energy. And peak oil is now so abundantly clear worldwide, and that's the other big thing that we're going to see this year. We're going to see oil over 100 maybe by the end of the month, across the board again from very respectable sources, we are seeing clear indications that we're going to beat the 147 a barrel price spike that triggered the 2008 collapse this year, probably before summertime.
Because I just saw that the price of Brent crude oil hit $95 on Monday.
Yes.
And it's in the danger zone. That's this man Fatih Birol, who's with the IEA, I believe.
Yes, He's their chief economist. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So it's already at 95. Well, it goes up and down, but it seems to be kind of heading up. You talked about 60 Minutes. They had a poll with Vanity Fair, and apparently that poll said 61% of the people say that that we should tax the rich.
Well,
that's what the people want. The Republicans talk about representing the people. 20% said to cut the military.
We will never tax the rich.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody needs to get that. The words should, could, and might are killer words. You know, you have to look at the probability that something's going to happen. President Obama just caved on repealing the Bush-era tax cuts.
Mm-hmm.
The rich are never going to allow themselves to be taxed more. As the wealth and income gap widens and the disparity of wealth increases and more of Americans are driven, homeless, out of work and everything else here, that is not going to happen. And to me, it's kind of like very wishful and unproductive thinking to say that we might tax the rich. Well, what? Yeah, okay, we might all fly to the moon tomorrow, but it's not going to happen.
Well, how do you expect the American people to react to this? I mean, as, you know, not just the retired public workers and people who's being forklifted, but say the general population. Do you think that they will just kind of accept this or ignore it, or what will they do?
No. Let's take a look for a brief moment at Europe, which is going to give us clear signs. The EU is history. It's toast. It's imploding. The economic collapse in Europe is, they don't dare put it on mainstream news here, but we've been following it closely. The EU is doomed. And what have we seen across Europe in the last 6 months? We have seen a revolution in Greece. We have seen armored cars on fire in the center of Rome. We have seen massive protests and demonstrations almost paralyzing the country in France. In Britain, the cutbacks are hitting extremely severely. Tens of thousands of people have already frozen to death, even as fuel prices go up, like 75 cents pence a liter for a gas.
Stay there. Whoop.
All this. It's
oh, there we are. Okay.
It's because of Mortgagegate, which continues to unfold in all its glorious criminality. It's because of government paralysis. It's because food prices are soaring. Inflation is sitting here, and we're going to have $4 to $5 gas this year.
Mm-hmm. So do you
this
think
is collapse? This is it.
You think that we will see what's happening in Europe or not?
Yes. No. I absolutely do.
And then what? What happens then? The police come out. The
I think a great deal of it depends upon how the state bankruptcies are handled. The only way that I read that makes sense to pull these off is to do them in a blitzkrieg fashion, to have four, five, six major states go bankrupt all at once, shock and awe. If you spread them out, then you provide a lot of time for unions, for people to rally, for people to oppose the bankruptcies. But once it happens in the big states like Michigan, California, New York, New Jersey, et cetera, that will pretty much put an end to everything right away. But if there is civil unrest in this country, it will happen quickly and it will be extremely violent, as was Rodney King, for example, the Rodney King insurrection in Los Angeles in 1992.
And then the police will be putting down these protests, although their own pensions may be getting cut also.
Police departments are being axed all over the country. We just had a guest on my own radio show, The Lifeboat Hour, which is on Progressive Radio Network. Tom Brown Jr., the infamous legendary tracker, who has an enormous, wonderful following, great guy. And in that show, I discussed a story from Newark, New Jersey, that their police force has been cut so deeply that crime is out of control in Newark right now. Mm-hmm. So police departments are not going to be able to control this. And I've read both the Patriot Act and the Homeland Security Act when they came out cover to cover. That was hard. But it's very clear that the priorities of law enforcement, especially given cutbacks, are only to prevent critical infrastructure, as in bridges, power generating stations, radio stations, hospitals, government buildings, etc. And that's all they have the manpower for. The rest of us are going to be pretty much on our own.
So, well, would the states call out the National Guard or the military be involved? But they're all over in Afghanistan.
That's exactly right.
Boy, okay. What about state legislatures? Can they tax the rich in their state if they wanted to?
The will and the votes won't exist to do that. In the movie Collapse, which is now 2 years old, we filmed the last not quite a year and a half. We filmed the last segment in June of 2009, which is when I had this great epiphany where I had to ask for a cut because it became clear to me then that the federal government, especially, and on a daily basis, state governments are now useless to help because they're owned by lobbyists and banks.
Well, it seems this is all adding up to chaos.
It's it would it's adding up to collapse, which is what's underway right now. There's no entitlement, and people are starting to get that before you talk about restoring any kind of justice and providing benefits again, you really have to do the think through to reach a discussion of how many resources are available to do that. And it's quickly apparent that it's not possible.
Okay, what would this collapse look like? Just sort of in a daily way. How would it appear to us?
Well, it would pretty much appear like the way the world has been operating since 2009. Unemployment continuing to rise.
Insurrections.
What is key is that governments are going to start failing now. And as governments fail, you add a different dimension to this. We have a huge credit bubble, and China is the Chinese economy is sustaining the whole world economy right now. But for those who have been watching closely, and again, we cover that on a daily basis at the World News Desk at CollapseNet, the Chinese economy is absolutely ready to just fall apart, and it's extremely well documented. China's now selling 42,000 cars a day, yet their roads are so jammed that they had a traffic jam that took 2 months to clear. So China, which needs to grow infinitely, has now put curbs on new car sales to reduce traffic congestion. But how do you grow? China is amazingly short of coal and energy. Most of their production factories now are shut down in the major cities 50% of the time, and they're reverting to diesel generators to make electricity so that they can make their little plastic tchotchkes, which come over here for us to buy. But we're not buying stuff anymore. We're pretty much tapped out. But the floods in Australia have destroyed coal supplies to China. I mean, China is beset by problems on all front, and a number of great analysts, Ambrose Evans Pritchard and others, have been writing consistently that everybody needs to look east because China's getting ready to fall apart.
Yeah, they're going to collapse before we do, he says.
Hey, but if they do, that's the end of the world economy.
Boy. Well, you know, at the same time, China is buying up European debts, I think, in Hungary and Spain and Greece. And they're also merging two rail companies that are kind of set to compete in the global market, whatever's left of that. And they've also they've opened a pipeline to Russia, you know, to provide oil. So where do you see all that going?
It's just... Okay, well, actually, the Russians opened a pipeline to China, not the other way around.
Okay.
And we were tracking that back in 03 and 04 when the decisions were made from the wilderness. There's a reason why the EU is absolutely unsustainable. But here's China sitting on trillions of U.S. dollars, which are becoming increasingly worth less because of quantitative easing and the way inflation is working around the world. So it's a tricky maneuver to totally divest from dollars, because if you do it too fast, you destroy the value on all your holdings too. But China's using the U.S. dollars they own to bail out Europe, but there's a very specific quid pro quo for that. For about, I don't know, since the 80s, I believe, there has been an EU arms and technology embargo on selling weapons and weapons technology to China. The quid pro quo is that China is buying votes to lift the ban. And right now, the Chinese military is expanding and behaving aggressively around the world in an open challenge to U.S. Supremacy. So what China's buying is the right to buy all the great EU weapons and technology that they can't get a hold of now.
You know, interesting thing about the pipeline from Russia to China, apparently it was the pipeline was built by Rosneft company, which bought part of Yukos. Now, Yukos was the company that Mr. Khodorkovsky founded. Is there any connection to Khodorkovsky's being in jail?
Well, not necessarily in the geopolitical relationship, but certainly within Russian internal political activity, yes. I mean, Khodorkovsky was the biggest of the oligarchs. He was a multi-billionaire, and he represented a power that could threaten the power of the state. That's why he's in jail.
So where is this? It seems to me we're heading towards a kind of a, you know, amid all the chaos and collapse, there will be a kind of we're getting to the, you know, the Eurasian heartland theory. This is the sort of a geopolitical idea that whoever controls the Eurasian landmass kind of basically runs the world. Mm-hmm. And it looks like China and Russia are in a way moving towards that. Maybe they'll include the Turkic-speaking people of Asia. But you see that happening?
Yes. I mean, the geopolitical center of gravity on planet Earth has moved back to Asia. That's where it's always been anyway. Mm-hmm. Here's a good example. European debt as a whole and EU debt is now rated lower than Indian debt. Okay, so Europe is becoming a third world. It's clear that the U.S. is tapped out. We don't have any more credit. We don't have any more money to buy all of these things that are being produced around the world. So we're viewed as literally a spent empire, which we are. And so this is only going to continue. Iran is now a full-fledged regional power. They're bringing their first nuclear power generating station online. They've opened oil refineries, and Iran is moving very aggressively to assert control over Iraq. And Iraq is going to get very ugly this year because the Iranian president has said, "I want all troops out by the end of the year." And Muqtada al-Sadr, one of the most effective militia leaders in Iraq, who is a Shia Muslim, has just returned from Iran, mm-hmm. and Iraqi oil structure needs the infrastructure needs hundreds of billions in investment, which the West and the U.S. can no longer provide because we're all bankrupt. But Russia and China are right there to do it. So the center of gravity has definitely moved back to Asia.
And China apparently is buying more oil from Saudi Arabia than we are.
Well, China is now using more oil than we are because they're growing. But there are, again, huge shortages, not enough power generating stations, and their roads are packed. Their air pollution is so bad. We have someone who's been to Shanghai. You can't even see across a major intersection. The air pollution is so bad. And China now has a huge housing bubble with, I may be wrong on the number, but it's about 1.3 million vacant housing units. Does that sound familiar?
Empty cities.
that no Chinese worker can afford because of the effect that inflation is having on China right now, and inflation is ravaging China as it is Brazil and much of the rest of the world.
So then Europe becomes a kind of an appendage to this superpower in Asia.
It's a liquidation sale, essentially, for Europe. But, you know, I am pretty convinced we're going to see massive, perhaps a pan-European revolution this summer. Europe tends to do that. They had a huge revolution in 1848 with strong historical parallels, but that was a continental revolution.
Well, it's interesting, you know, what you're saying about, you know, the center being in Asia, and it was sort of for a few hundred years it shifted to Europe and the Americas. And there's some guy, a geographer, wrote that that Europe was actually because when sailing ships got more developed, they were closer to the Americas than China was, and that's why Europe conquered the Americas and exploited them. But that period is over, and now it's shifting back to where it was before.
Exactly.
Boy.
Exactly.
You know, I'd like to ask you about what they call the oil depletion protocol. Tell us what that is. It's very important. I think people should understand it.
Well, again, this is one of those great ideas that should have been implemented. I don't see any way that it could be now for political reasons. It was written by my good friend Colin Campbell, who is, of course, the godfather of the peak oil movement now. And basically what it said was it should be enacted that no nation will import or use domestic oil in quantities exceeding their own decline rate. So everybody essentially needs to taper off oil at the same rate, because when countries like China, which has the ability for the time being to buy all the oil it wants at any price, pretty much, do that, then there is a disparity in the availability of energy, which is a very risky thing because that will tempt nations who have a momentary leg up on energy supplies to become more aggressive.
Well, two more questions. Where does all this leave Israel as far as the Middle East goes?
In a place I wouldn't want to be in. Mm-hmm. Of course, one of the biggest unspoken issues in all of the Middle East is the population explosion and the absolute disappearance of fresh water supplies. Israel is now living in a region in which Iran is absolutely the dominant military power. It's too late to even think about attacking Iran now on any front. Nobody's going to do that because the rest of the world will nuke us. Because what Iran is making clear is that they are better able to assist Iraq with the second largest oil reserves on the planet to produce more oil more quickly. And any attack on Iran, now that peak oil is clear and prices are starting to skyrocket, will drive the price of oil through the roof overnight. So Israel has long lost its ability to attack Iran. And Israel's in a tight place, but, I mean, we're all on the same planet. We're all in a tight place.
You think Israel will have to cut a deal?
I don't think that they will have to cut a deal. They will do whatever the Israeli government is going to do to negotiate through very tricky waters, but they cannot take the role of aggressor anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think their window has closed for being, if you will, a bully against Palestinians and any other group that opposes them.
And one other question. I think we have a couple minutes still left. I understand that the U.S. gets one-third of its oil from domestic production. Is that true?
That's about right, as opposed to 90% of it in 1960.
Ah, okay. So we get one. Would it be possible, I mean, say you had a drastic rationing program to sort of survive on a very low level using our domestic oil for I don't know how many years, maybe months. Is that possible at all?
Well, again, you would assume that the U.S. government would act rationally.
Yeah, okay.
I argue that that's a fool's dream right now.
Mm-hmm. They may just kind of go crazy then.
Well, yeah. I mean, clearly the marketplace is going to be left to decide who gets oil, and that's not something I think is wise, because what we see now is OPEC has been caught cheating. They have set production quotas for 2010, but as the oil price rose, they were cheating and selling much more oil than the quotas allowed because they needed the money to service their debts, you know, and their own investment bubble. And unfortunately, as Colin Campbell pointed out real clearly now, the way money works is making the world use what's left of a very precious resource very, very quickly and for all the wrong reasons, to build more cars, to build more consumer goods, when we really should be using that resource to prepare ourselves for a world where we're not going to have it.
Well, we can prepare ourselves on a local level. I guess that's the lesson of all this, is that
we
are on our own with our friends and community people. Well, thank you very much. We've been talking with Mike Rupert, author, a film star. You can check him out on CollapseNet. Look up CollapseNet. It's a very interesting website.
And, CollapseNet.com, yes.
And also catch that program on the History Channel.
The History Channel, Prophets of Doom. It'll be running all month. Jim Kunstler was brilliant. Nate Higgins from the Oil Drum was brilliant. And this panel of six experts, big experts, we all came to the conclusion that the most important thing to do right now was to relocalize in every way, shape, and form possible, and above all, local food production.
Okay, thank you very much, Mike Rupert. We will stay tuned. Thanks a lot. Stay tuned for Air Cascadia.